garbage show, the garbage show. This is the garbage show.
Hello, guys.
Hello there, everybody.
And I'm also here with...
Do you want to start over?
Should we?
That was not... You didn't press green.
Oh, I thought you were going to press it. But they...
I was walking you through it.
They didn't say anything until you pressed the green.
Who didn't say anything?
Steven and Scott.
And then you just want to ignore your own intro? That's fine.
Okay. Are we not on live right now?
We're live. This is all live.
You guys are coming through.
It's actually super loud.
I was about to walk out when I noticed there was nothing going on there.
Okay. So as I mentioned, this is we're here with Stephen Doniger and Scott Burrows from Doniger and Burrows, California's premier fashion, art, entertainment, and technology law boutique, along with my good friend Alana Golikov. She's also, you want to get in there?
Golovko, hi.
Golovko. She's also a lawyer. She's going to help me out with the translations from artist to lawyer, and she has an interest in art. But why don't you guys say hello and talk a little about your backgrounds and how you got into for your interest in art, and then also how you got into, you know, how you became lawyers and in your interest in the two.
Thank you, sir, and hello to the K-Chang audience out there.
Yeah.
So this is Steve Doniger. I've been practicing law for 20 years. I got my start with artists working for a federal judge that had handled some really interesting cases. The Vanna White versus Samsung trial occurred while I was there. Handled a number of copyright cases, trademark cases, and just said, this is some fun stuff. So slowly but surely moved my career in that direction, met up with Mr. Burrows, and we've had a very illustrious career.
Yeah, how did you guys actually meet?
Well, Stephen at the time was working in the Marina Del Rey on the west side of Los Angeles. I was living on Main Street in Santa Monica. We had gone to the same law school. Our law school had a job board that he had posted an advertisement on seeking someone to work with him.
This was pre-internet days, I think?
It was an electronic job board,
okay,
right?
Okay.
It was a virtual.
It was like a card stuck on a board, like right? Lawyer seeking other lawyer.
I pulled a small tab of paper from the bottom
and brought it home.
I had directions for where to send his pigeon.
Right. This is 1946, in case you guys were wondering.
Right. So I was able to, because he was so close, I was able to ride my bicycle to his office.
Right.
We had a meeting. It wasn't very formal. I probably had flip-flops on. And we talked for about an hour and hit it off, I think, personally and professionally, even though we didn't really know each other professionally at the time. Other than that that interview.
And right, you guys got along.
We got along. 10 years later, we're working together. It's the longest
relationship. This seems like a good kid. And,
right. He took him under your wing and look at him now.
Right. He mentored me. He took me from a small...
That's right. And then did you guys have an interest in art prior to starting the firm? Or is that...
Before we started working together, before going to law school, I was a music journalist. In college, I had a column in my school newspaper. I would go see shows, review CDs back when CDs were a thing. And it was always very interesting to me. I always really enjoyed the creative pursuits and being in that world. And I noticed after graduating from law school and getting into the legal world that a lot of people in these different creative disciplines didn't necessarily have the representation that they probably should have for a number of reasons, be they, you know, financial, or be they that it's just not something that comes up all that often, or be it that a lot of the times when you have an artist in a lawsuit, they're usually up against a large studio or corporation or entity with a lot of resources at their disposal, which can be sort of intimidating. Mm-hmm. So working with Steven, we've been able to create something or create a space that is approachable, because people generally don't like lawyers, especially artists.
Yeah, like you said,
we often don't even speak the same language, right? So, you know, we have a space now where our offices are, we're not in a big high-rise downtown. We're in a reclaimed factory in Venice Beach, right? And it's not, you walk in, we're dressed like we're dressed now. Not very, you can't see that out there in radio world.
I'll describe, two very dapper gentlemen.
But casual dapper.
Exactly, right.
It's been a really great ride. Before I met Scott, I had a number of friends. I mean, a huge community of artists that I'm friends with, musicians, graphic artists. I was always the go-to person answering questions. I have a 2-year-old now, so not so much anymore, but I've been really in the Burning Man community for years. Like, I mean, just people that are creating huge, amazing community. Creative community. And I feel like there's the people who have really amazing creative abilities, and then there's the people that they need to support them. And I don't think that I'm one of the people with great creative abilities, so I have relegated myself to being one of the people who can support them, and we've been really fortunate to have a career that lets us do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I realize I also sort of ask a leading question. I ask if you guys are interested in art, and you guys are actually IP, intellectual property rights attorneys, which isn't necessarily only about like art, right? Like there's other types of intellectual property.
We tend to represent the content creators. Yeah. So generally speaking, if we're involved in a lawsuit, we're going to be representing the party responsible for creating the artwork or writing the story or taking the photograph or doing whatever it is to actually create something, to create the content and defending that content against these generally larger companies.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And mostly we deal with the copyright and trademark law. There's also another area of intellectual property law, patent, that we don't do very much with, but we dabble, and we've got an attorney that we work with on patent cases.
Why is that just the nature of the amount of cases? Like, you don't do as many patent cases, or is it a special?
Patent tends to be more technical. Inventions, creations, people with scientific backgrounds and math backgrounds, and more technical and less creative.
You have a background in patent. Didn't you have some crazy story about working for a patent attorney? Is that something we even want to get into right now? Maybe she's pantomiming. She's going to pantomime tonight on radio.
Let the record reflect she's shaking her head no vigorously.
Thank you, counselor.
But even beyond the laws that apply to things like copyrights and trademarks, there are a number of other really interesting statutes that are art-specific. Mm. For instance, we have the VARA law, the Visual Artist Rights Act, that says that if you create something, you know, a mural or a street art piece or something, and it's legal and it's commissioned, it can't be removed without your permission, basically.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's that statute. There's California Civil Code 3344, which
the misappropriation of likeness.
All right. If your image is out there, your name is out there, a company can't take it and use it without your permission.
Yeah.
So within that whole, within the purview of a content creator law firm, we're able to work with a lot of things beyond copyright and trademark and what most people probably think is the nuts and bolts of that sort of practice.
And we've handled a couple of cases for people who've had their image used without their permission.
Yeah.
We've handled cases. We've handled a very wide variety of cases, but there's always new battles to fight.
That brings up a really, one of the first questions I wrote down is, what are some of the Hopkins, like, what are the reoccurring issues that artists come to you with? Like, you mentioned a few, or, you know, how would you categorize, like, what's the number one thing that artists, or if there is a number one thing that artists come to you and say, like, this happened to me, or this is my concern?
I think nowadays what we're hearing more and more of is, my art's on the internet, what do I do about it?
Mm.
It's just this problem that's been getting worse and worse every year. A lot of it's, for a long time it was music. You know, that's now sort of done with, streaming has taken over, and that's great. But now it's fine art, whether it be someone whose artwork was taken by somebody else on Etsy, and like, why is this person on Etsy selling my material? This is a direct copy of what I made. Or photographers are having a lot of issues because they spend money to create their photos, or this is the way that they put food on their table, and it's very easy to repost a photo, even for corporations that probably should know better. And so that is really something that it's difficult to pursue, and it's expensive to pursue.
Yeah.
But you have the situation where artists have to decide, is it worth it for me to pursue this and protect my livelihood, or do I just let it go and try to get another deal or do something different?
That my immediate thought was, most of the time there's no financial gain to pursuing. Like someone stole my image or my idea and they use it on a blog or something. Like it seems this is my thinking. Like there's from you guys' perspective, is most of the time there's nothing to they can actually, like, they can't. Someone steals your drawing and puts it on their blog, you're not going to get any compensation from that.
Well, it depends.
Okay.
There's a lawyer answer for you.
Right. Right.
That's probably the two most important factors are, do you have a timely copyright registration, and is there a viable defendant as opposed to someone working in his mom's basement that has a blog that doesn't have any money. If you've got a registration that predates the infringement and the person that took the work knew or reasonably should have known that it was protected by copyright, and in this day and age everyone knows that photographs are protected by copyright,
right,
or at least should, the timely registration allows you to recover attorney's fees and statutory damages, which can be up to $150,000 per claim. Our firm has taken countless cases to trial, and through prosecuting them, through litigation and a significant number to trial, and we've gotten statutory damage awards of $150,000 in one case, and multiple statutory damage awards in the tens of thousands, if not six figures, for willful infringement cases. So there's money there, and the statutory damage award is not necessarily linked to how much money they made off of it or anything else. It really, there's a number of factors that go into it, but if you don't have timely registration, then you're limited to trying to seek whatever they actually made or whatever you actually lost, and it can be hard to make that worthwhile since you can't recover attorney's fees
And attorney's fees can be quite substantial. We had a case earlier this year where luckily our client had registered his artwork, and it was a case against Urban Outfitters, the large retailer. A lot of resources, they spent a lot of money litigating the case. We won the case, we took it all the way through trial, and we made a motion under the Copyright Act for our fees because our client had a timely registration, and the court awarded us $380,000 in fees on one case. That's how much it costs to litigate these things. If you're up against a sophisticated defendant, that's a large corporation, that's a lot of money. So registering and not registering is one of the most important things.
I think this is a perfect learning moment for the artists. And it's also a good segue. We can talk about the difference between copyright, trademarks, and other types of protections, what those mean and how they protect your work. Like what, there's copyright, there's trademark, and isn't there like one other? Patent.
Yeah.
But copyright and trademark, what's the difference and what are the benefits of each for a painter or a visual artist?
Yeah, so a copyright and trademark are exactly what the words would suggest.
Right.
A copyright is the right to copy. A trademark is a mark used in trade. And really, that's it. So a copyright, but it's a little bit more complicated, but I'll give you the quick answer. A copyright is a right that is given to an author the moment that they create an original work. And when I say author, a painter, or a sculptor, anyone who's creating an original work of authorship is what the Copyright Act says. And the moment you create it, you get a copyright in that work. You get the exclusive right to copy. It's not a monopoly on the idea. If someone else completely independently creates something that's very, very similar or even virtually identical, that person has not infringed your copyright if they didn't copy. If they didn't have your work, if they didn't access your work, if they didn't base their work on your work, there's no copyright infringement claim because they didn't copy.
Right.
So people say, oh, well, you can't claim a monopoly on whatever the work is, right? The answer is, well, no, anyone else is free to create their version of it or their take on that idea, but you can't copy my artistic expression of that idea.
When you say artistic expression, you're talking about the look of it. They can't look similar. It was what a lay person would sort of take your meaning.
It can look similar if it's been independently created, if there's been no basing this one work right. on the other work.
Right.
If there's no copying, it doesn't matter if they look similar.
Right.
Right. And or if the similarity is solely given by what you're drawing. In other words, I drew right. a picture of a Dalmatian.
Right.
You drew a picture of a right. Dalmatian. You know, I can't stop you from drawing a Dalmatian just because you saw my Dalmatian. And if the similarities are because that's what a Dalmatian looks like, then that may be a defense, even though they look similar.
And
the question is there specific artistic expression of mine that you've taken and copied beyond the idea?
I think this is where it gets confusing to, I'm representing the average artist here, but because that becomes then just a personal interpretation. And, you know, I'm sure the judge has guidelines, but still, there can't be anything other than a personal interpretation of that law. Like, is this, you know, was this based on this, is what you're saying?
There have been a number of cases where we've been able to show, you know, an overlay of the work that it's the same work.
Right.
You know,
and those cases are straightforward. If the work's the same, then it's hard for them to argue.
Right.
I had no idea.
Part of it is, right. There certainly, though, is, you know, in copyright law, ideas are not protectable. Artistic expression is. Sometimes it's clear that what was copied is just the idea and not the artistic expression.
Right.
Sometimes it's right, clear right. that what was copied is the artistic expression. There certainly is
right,
a gray area
right, right.
where you can't draw a bright line. But you don't really want to draw a bright line, because the minute you draw a bright line, some clever person is going to figure out the way to take
right.
your take whatever they
yeah.
can take around it. And, you know, you want to, the whole purpose of copyright law is to encourage more artistic creation and expression. There's this view that we're richer as a society when more people are creating more art and music and literature and sculpture. And so you want to encourage people to create more. And the way to encourage people to create more is to put the fear of God in them without a bright line rule
right.
that if you copy someone else's work or take someone else's, you know, idea and lay it out in the same way they did, generally speaking, you might get in trouble. To really encourage them to just create something new, because that's what we want people to do.
It's interesting. Yeah, it makes sense that you don't want to, now you explain it like that, it makes sense that you don't want to draw a very hard line. The difficulty for the artist is then they don't know, you know, sort of like what to pursue and what not to pursue, and like, you know, how to even, you know, make that distinction. But talk about trademark. You talk about copyright. Like, you explain copyright. What is trademark?
Trademark. Yeah.
Trademark. Yeah.
Yeah. As I mentioned, a trademark is a mark used in trade. It's a mark, a word or symbol that's used to denote to basically say what the origin, what the source of goods and services are. So the swoosh. When you see that swoosh for Nike, you know that product is made by a certain company.
Nike, and not like Scott Burrows. All right, you're getting a Nike hat made by Nike, has all those things that Nike evokes in your mind. It's not something that's Scott or Steven made in their garage.
Right. Is there a more legal protection with having a trademark than there is with copyright, or is it different?
It's completely different.
Oh,
it's different. Completely different. The trademark law certainly protects the companies that own the trademarks, but the primary purpose of trademark law is to protect consumers from confusion in the marketplace,
mm-hmm.
so that when you buy a product, you know where it's coming from.
Right.
You can imagine, trademark law goes back to you know, medieval times, and you can imagine that there was a company, there was a sword maker who made the best swords, and if you went into battle with those swords, they held up, they were
right.
strong, and he had his little insignia on them. And if someone else starts making cheap swords and putting that insignia on it, and someone thinks they're getting this high quality sword and goes into battle and right away the sword breaks and they die,
right.
that's a problem. So you want people to know what the source of their product is, so that they can, if there's a problem, they know who to go
right.
back to. If products, you know, if someone gets a reputation as being a good quality product, that you know that you're getting good quality products when you buy something with that mark on it.
So basically to discourage any kind of likeness that would take away the value of the original.
Right. Right. And copyright law is not in any way designed to right. identify the source of the product. It's just to encourage artistic expression. So they're very different
right.
in the underlying purpose.
What about registration then? These are the three terms I know, and after this we're sort of in uncharted yeah. territory, but one artist, the artist that we were talking outside before the show about the same artist who mentioned that if you mail your work to yourself, you know, that provides some sort of protection. And you guys, we don't even need to go into that. You heard their response, laughter. No,
Scott and I just co-authored an article in the Daily Journal on the significance and effect of registration, and how registration and copyright are often...
Yeah.
collapsed as if they're the same thing, and they're not. Scott, do you want
to... And that's a thing that we get a lot of phone calls about, where people call us up and say, hey, I've been knocked off, and I have this legal problem, but I didn't copyright my work, so there's nothing I can do about it. We have to say, well, no, that's right. That's not right. You get a copyright in your work as soon as you create it. As soon as you take your creative expression, you reduce it into a tangible medium, whether that be by making a sculpture, drawing a painting, writing a story. The minute that it's committed to paper or whatever the media is, you have a copyright in it and you can enforce that copyright. Registration is a process by which you go to the U.S. Copyright Office, you submit some documentation reflecting your creation and some details related to your creation. Then they give you a certificate, use that certificate to obtain statutory damages and attorney's fees, as Stephen indicated earlier. So registration, we encourage it. It only costs $55. You can group multiple works together if you register before you publish. We could talk about publishing
yeah.
if you want. It's kind of a complicated thing that even some of the courts don't get properly, but we can...
Let's just say in some instances you can put multiple works on a single registration.
So, yeah.
Let's just leave it at
this
that.
This brings up the question, who should register their work and when should they register it? So I'm...
Everyone and often.
So I'm an illustrator fresh out of school. I have my portfolio. I think I'm ready to tackle the world with this group of illustrations. Should I register them all for $55? Should I register them one?
So let me tell you something that not a lot of people know. Not a lot of attorneys know. It is actually mandatory to register all works with the Copyright Office. If you take a look at the Copyright Act.
All
original works of authorship are actually required to be registered with the Copyright Office. That in the Copyright Act it provides that every work of original authorship shall be registered with the Copyright Office. Now, you can't file a lawsuit, you can't do certain things until you've complied with that requirement.
Right.
And people, the Copyright Office isn't gonna come to
right,
you and say,
right, right.
But they actually can. There actually is a procedure by which the Copyright Office can say, hey, you haven't registered this work, you have to register it. And if you don't, they can assess a fine. No one knows about that. Has that ever happened?
No, because this law was promulgated way back in the day when the Library of Congress had been set up, and they wanted to make sure the Library mm-hmm. of Congress had a very robust collection, all the books, all the materials that were coming out.
Okay.
So they required you to submit it. That law is kind of still on the books, which is
still,
what Steven is referring
books,
to.
Yeah.
But we would definitely tell the young artist that has a number of works that is about to attempt to monetize them either
yeah.
by publishing themselves or working with a company to register them at that time, because before they're shown to the public, before they're exhibited, before they're displayed publicly, you can put 50 works together on one registration
yeah.
and submit it to the Copyright Office for $55. It can be done online. It's a fairly simple and straightforward procedure. And then those works are protected for a long period of
and
time.
There's just no good reason not to.
Yeah.
What the benefits that you get in the event of an infringement, in the event someone uses your work without your permission, the benefits of timely registration pay off in spades relative to the minuscule cost.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, I didn't know this, and this is definitely some extremely useful information that most artists, I think, don't know.
And if you could maybe go through the process of obtaining a trademark. I know there's been a lot of interest in just the application, some of the trials and tribulations that there might be in comparing to other existing trademarks, and just that general process.
Sure. Getting a trademark is a much more involved process, and it's a much more involved process for a reason. Because trademarks are source identifying, any two marks that are going to be confusingly similar when used on the same product are going to create a trademark infringement issue. and are not going to be allowed. So the trademark office, when you submit an application, they're going to look to see what else has been used, what other marks are registered, and if there are any marks that are confusingly similar for the category of goods that you want to use your mark on, they're not going to allow the registration.
How much is the, because that's obviously way more involved. Someone has to need someone who's researching right. those marks. So how much is a trademark? Is there a set price for it?
What is it, $325?
There's a filing plus. Fee with the U.S. Patent Trademark Office that I believe is either $275 or $325.
I think it's $325.
Per category, plus. Depending on whether you do it online or in paper.
Right.
But then you generally want to have an attorney submit that material for you, because once it's submitted, you can't modify it. And you don't want to submit an application mm-hmm. if there's potentially going to be a conflict, because you lose that filing fee if they reject your right. application. And a lot of the times there's going to be something that's going to be similar enough right. where, unless you have a mark that's so far afield, which is what you're actually seeing now, it's no surprise that when you see these new startup companies or tech companies, they always have some name that's very strange, like right. Splunk or Flappy or whatever.
Or exactly. Uber.
right. Yeah. And that's because that sort of a name gives you stronger trademark rights. Mm. There's less likely to be something with a similar name in your same category. Because if you have the same name in different categories, like there's Scott Tissue Paper or Scott right. Tires, you can probably both coexist, because a consumer is not going to be confused. They're not going to see Scott Tissue Paper and think, oh, that must be by the guys that make right, the tires. Right. But there's some closer questions. Let's say you have a fashion line and somebody has a fragrance or a perfume. Is it possible that a fashion line is going to expand into perfume? It's more likely than tissue paper into tires.
Yeah.
So the trademark office looks at all of those issues.
Right, right. Decision. That's interesting. Well, two things I want to talk about registration a little bit more, but I guess that's a good tip to pick a unique name if you want to trademark it. It makes it easier.
100%. You want your name to be as fanciful as possible.
It's always the balance between something that people will remember and that actually seemingly ties in with your product,
right?
And
right,
something
right,
that's
right,
fanciful
right.
and out there,
original enough. That,
yeah, like Lyft is actually a brilliant LYFT, but yeah. it's like, you know, hey, do you need a Lyft like for a car ride?
It evokes actually, it, but it's also but it's, creative enough. Yeah, that it's not
yeah.
descriptive.
Yeah, and it probably wasn't taken. There was no Lyft.com at the time, which is another reason people choose their name, because it's like one of the few .coms that's still available.
You asked about the cost of a trademark, of getting a trademark, and we talked about the filing fees, and Scott mentioned you really do want to hire an attorney as well. One of the other things that we always do when we do trademark registrations is we do a complete name search, not just of the federal trademark database, which anyone can search, but every state states have their own trademark databases. There's, you know, a full search will do business name filings, internet search. I mean, you want to basically look and see, is anyone out there using this name or a confusingly similar name in business, regardless of whether they've registered with the trademark
right,
office?
Right.
Because if they have, they may have pre-existing common law trademark rights that your rights are going to be subject to. And if you move into their area where they were operating first, even though you have the federal registration, you can be infringing on their.
Do you guys trademark. Have any examples of cases where that happened? Like they.
Oh my God! There's a brilliant case with Hollywood Video, like the Hollywood Video that everyone knows.
Yeah.
They
or new. Rest in peace, Hollywood
yeah,
Video.
Yeah, rest in peace. They, you know, they registered, they checked the trademark registry, they saw no one registered name, Hollywood Video, this is brilliant, we're going to expand. And somewhere in the Midwest, there was a small chain of, I think, 3 or 4 video stores operating under the name Hollywood Video that had never registered, was just operating in their little locality. And as Hollywood Video started to expand across the country, all of a sudden they came up against the territory where this pre-existing Hollywood Video chain was, and they couldn't move into that area without infringing on their rights. And they were like, we want to buy you out. And the old small Hollywood Video was like, nope.
Pay
this much. Nope.
Were they holding out for more?
I don't know. Like, the details of the ultimate buyout were confidential, but I have to imagine they held out for a lot of money.
Right. So I'm sure in those cases, people, it's kind of American birthright to capitalize on.
But actually, you know, I have another great case that we worked on. We had a client, a denim company under the name Pollution Denim. And they found out that there was another company that actually had a state trademark registration for pollution denim in like, I don't know, it was like Arkansas or something. It was like some
state that wasn't California.
Some state that wasn't California. Right. And there became this conflict over who had what rights where first. And it gets really, really ugly. So you don't want to get into that. Once you put a lot of money into your branding and your name, and the last thing you want is to have to deal with.
So the takeaway from this is it's worth it to hire an attorney to do a thorough job of research to make sure that, especially the more money you're putting in your company, the more this is important. I guess no matter what you're putting, but definitely if you're going to invest, you know, if you're starting a multi-million dollar company, you want to spend the money to...
Yeah, you would hate to do all your branding, put together your product, go to market, and then a week later get a cease and desist letter from someone saying, I've been using that name for 10 years. Stop. Right. Get out of the market, get a new name.
I've been waiting for this opportunity for 10 years for someone to come up with Hollywood Video. That's probably, you know, you guys remember early on in the internet, that's what people would do. They would buy up domain names and sit on them. That's
domain illegal. Squatting. Cyber squatting is illegal. There's certain statutes that actually are applicable directly to that.
Well, it's not illegal to find a name you like and sit on it. It's illegal to find a name that you know belongs to another company and sit on it for the purpose of then trying to sell it to them.
Well, there's certain names, like the one I'm familiar with was Madonna, which is obviously a huge celebrity, but it's also a kind of generic name.
Yeah, or it could be something for the church.
Yeah.
There's a number of good faith reasons that you could argue were the basis for your registration of something like Madonna.
Right. This is a completely, I don't know if you guys can answer this question, but like in that situation where, my feeling is that the person, you know, it wasn't a church, it was just the person who sort of knew that Madonna was a celebrity and it would be an important, that she would want the name. Although it is also at the same time fairly just a name. So what in that situation, is that something that you just have to take to the judge and see what they said, or is that something that you would like?
There's actually a specific tribunal that they've set up to deal with those sort of disputes, because as you might imagine, people are registering from all countries around the world. So it's actually an international agency that you sit in front of and you make your challenge to why you think they registered in bad faith. The person with the URL isn't able to argue and present evidence as to why they're actually using it in good faith, and then the decision is made based on that evidence.
So that can't even go to trial. It's an arbitration type situation.
It's an out of court proceeding in front of there's a certain organization that addresses those.
It's akin to an arbitration.
Right.
Does that mean legally you can't go to trial with it? This is the only place that you can adjudicate?
No, you can address it if it's two U.S. companies that are fighting one another over the URLs. You can certainly go to court. There's a case right now that's pending, or it was recently settled here in Los Angeles, where the Oscars, who are one of the most litigious groups out there, they sue, you know, there's a chocolate company that's selling chocolate Oscars. You know, they'll get a cease and desist letter from the Oscars.
That makes sense to me, though. That's like, you know, the Oscars and selling chocolate. You're clearly,
And they found out that GoDaddy, which is the big registrar of, you go there and you can register for different URLs, was selling the ability to register things like Oscar party or Oscar pool or these different things. So they actually ended up in court fighting over that. The Oscar people said, this is a misuse of our trademark.
Yeah.
Right? So there you have this overlap between trademark rights and the different things that happen with URLs. And they battled out in court, and the Oscars were actually, they prevailed.
Yeah.
They said that you guys are misusing our trademarks. You're certainly doing this to trade off the goodwill of the Oscar name, and there should be damages for that.
To me, how do you guys feel? To me, that makes sense. Like, you know, the word Oscar in part, like, you may not only be using the word Oscar, but by adding party to it, you're clearly trying to benefit. Is that, like, from your guys' perspective, did you think that was, like, a good decision? Or does it make sense? You don't really have an opinion?
I think it's probably a good decision. If there's an organization out there that is profiting off the goodwill that you've developed from having this organization that people see very fondly, then there should be some sort of repercussion.
It's funny. It's hard to state a rule that I think categorically across the board is going to address these situations the right way. You know, I tend to agree with the Oscar decision, And every time the Super Bowl comes around, oops, did I just commit trademark?
The big game. He means the big game.
Every time the big game, and you can't say, you know, the S Bowl. Like, I'm just like, oh, come on.
Right.
Like, there's just certain things that I think are inane,
like,
but, you know.
Like Xeroxing. That's another myth. Can you use the word Xerox? Like,
well, there's a very great description for things. Like, they call that genericide. Yeah. When you have a trademark, that becomes so. Because as Stephen indicated, a trademark is something that is supposed to be used for the public to identify the source of something. But when something becomes so widespread, if you're Xeroxing something or using Kleenex, blow your nose, then it loses that ability as a source signifier. It doesn't signify to people. Because any tissue paper is Kleenex, so what's the point? Because of that, companies spent a lot of money. The Champagne region of France is one of the most famous ones. You may be paging through a magazine or maybe online, you may see an advertisement that says Champagne, it's from this area in France. You're like, why are they advertising that? Everyone knows it. But what they're doing is they're trying to fight off genericide.
Right.
Because one of the piece of evidence that a court would look at to see if something's become generic is the advertising revenue and what the company's doing to make sure that it stays a source signifier.
Is part of that policing it like really early and vigorously? Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You can certainly, a trademark can be deemed abandoned if you don't take the appropriate steps to protect it. And it can be deemed, there's a whole process of consent to allowing someone else to use a mark if you don't take the appropriate steps. Which is why Sparkling White from California is going to be a Sparkling White from California and not Champagne.
I want to talk about a couple of things. First, we talked a little bit about registration, but you guys talked a little bit about what the benefits are for registering your work. You talked about how you can register it, and you can register multiple visual images or multiple items. But then what's the benefit? And then after that, I want to talk a little bit about the process of contacting you guys. Like, what do you think, what should someone do if they felt like they were, like, what should an artist do if they felt like they were wrong? So the registration, what are the benefits of registering your work over copywriting? With copyright, we know copyright, it comes with the creation, but what are the benefits of registering the work?
Registering your copyright?
Wasn't it
or trademark? Are you talking about trademark now or copyright?
No. I thought you said there was additional. You have if you register your work, you have additional protection.
Are we talking about copyright or trademark?
I was talking about registering your work.
Well, let's talk about both. Actually, let's talk about sort of the benefit in terms of if you're an artist and you have creative output that you feel has been taken from you or copied, or a mark that's been reproduced in an improper way, what are the benefits of registering or obtaining early versus not getting a trademark or a copyright, and what sort of recourse do you have at that point?
Okay, in terms of copyright, the possession of a valid copyright registration that you obtained before the infringement allows you two major benefits. The first of which is the ability to seek statutory damages, which can be up to $150,000. So if you're dealing with an infringement that's not large, having that registration allows you to seek those damages even without evidence that they made any money off it. So somebody could have taken your artwork and put it on their website, and maybe it's a commercial, maybe it's a business, but not a business that made a lot of money at the time it was using your work to advertise their services. And you maybe wouldn't want to go after them if you didn't have a registration, because you'd be limited to whatever that value was, whatever the value was of them having your artwork on their website for that limited time. And it's not going to be a huge number. It's certainly not going to be enough to go through a federal court case.
Right.
But with the registration on those facts, you can go to court and seek up to $150,000. You can also seek your attorney's fees, which may be hundreds of thousands of dollars. So your damages in a case like that, where somebody's taken, you know, the local car dealership has taken your painting and used it on their splash page on their website, that case goes from being worth $1,000 to being worth potentially $200,000.
I think this is really probably the number one thing that artists are gonna take away from this. If you plan on monetizing your artwork now or in the future in any way whatsoever, get it registered, right? Is that the...
Absolutely, 100%. And it's not something that you have to go crazy about. It's not like you have to register every piece of work you make.
Right.
It's things that you are attempting to monetize, things that you're actually publishing.
Yeah.
People sometimes tend to go the other way, go a little overboard. They register every sketch that's in their sketchbook. That's not necessary. But if you have work that you're submitting to companies or that you're publishing, that if you have an online store or a website, that material should be registered before it goes up to protect yourself.
Well, just to add to what Scott said, and sort of point at the other side of the coin, is that if you haven't registered, then you're limited to seeking whatever loss you suffered as a result of the infringement.
Right.
And to the extent it's not duplicative, any profit or gain made by the other side. And in cases where someone's just using a photo online, you might not be able to show that you suffered any real loss.
Right.
And they might not have made any real profit. Just by way of example, there's a case that I took to trial about a year ago, and the defendants had told us, oh, well, we only made a couple $1,000 in profit. If our client didn't have timely registration and that were true, we could go through an entire trial that could cost our client over $100,000 and the defendant, you know, to get a couple $1,000s, because that's all you could get. We had timely registration. We made a demand that was fairly modest. The defendants refused to pay. They just wanted to play hardball. We took the case through trial, and we ended up getting a $30,000 statutory damage award, and then the court awarded us over $80,000 in costs and attorney's fees for a final judgment of over $110,000 on a case where they only made a couple $1,000s. And that simply wouldn't have been possible if we didn't have the timely registration.
And that's why it's so important for the artist. Yeah. It does level the playing field. Because a lot of the times these companies are counting on the fact that it's expensive and artists is not going to spend a lot of money to pursue it.
Yeah.
But having registration gives you a very strong piece of leverage, a really big stick to use to say, listen, if you are going to fight me on this, you're going to spend a lot of money trying to go scorched earth and snow me under with documents. There's a lot of risk in that. So if I make it through and I win, you're going to end up paying all my attorney's fees.
Right.
Absolutely. And conversely, if you don't have the timely registration, you say, you're infringing my work and I'm going to sue you. And they say, well, where's your registration? Yeah. Well, I haven't registered yet. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to say, you're not going to file a federal lawsuit over something where there's no damages and I'm using your work and here, I'll take it off and it's not worth anyone's. You're not going to sue me.
That gave you some exposure and that's worth it. That's the thing now. We're like, exposure is not worth. You can't buy soup with exposure.
We know about getting exposure for compensation.
Right.
is that the first question you ask someone when they sort of feel like their artwork was stolen, like, did you register the work? Is that the very first question?
It's kind of the second question. First, we make sure that they created it.
Okay.
Right, walk us through the creative process. When did you create it? How do you create it? And then we would ask them, is it registered?
Well, and right up there also is, where did you find the infringement? Because we've had cases, like, I took a case to trial almost 2 years ago now, a little less, where it was a copyright case. I ended up getting a jury verdict before attorney's fees, before anything else. And this is based, not statutory, actual damages, a jury verdict of over $1.754 million.
Wow.
So, you know, we've had cases where the artwork is featured on clothing sold at major retail stores, Target, JCPenney, you know, and sometimes there's very large volumes of clothing and the profit disgorgement claim can easily be into the 6 and 7 figures. So sometimes having registration may not be determinative and may not matter that much, because the scope of the infringement and what may be the disgorgeable profits, even without statutory damage or attorney's fees, is significant. But in a lot of the cases, it's just not.
So this is a good segue. Let's talk about, because we're sort of running up on time a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about, because if nothing else, artists will listen to the show and the word will get around. What's the process? You know, if someone feels like they were wrong, do you want them to contact you, or are most of the cases you get like, we can't, like, someone used this on your blog? Like, so what should someone do when they feel like they were wrong?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing they should do is look at what they found to be the infringement, see if it's a commercial use or a personal use.
Okay.
99% of the time it's a personal use.
Right.
The prototypical kid in his grandma's basement posting something on his blog. That's something you're not going to want to pursue in almost every case, because it's just not worthwhile. If it's a commercial use, if it is a company that's using your material without your permission, the first thing you should do is definitely not post it on social media and start making a bunch of statements about it.
Okay.
Because anything you say can be used against you. It's evidence. So you don't want to say something like, why did they use my artwork without asking me? I'll let them use it for $100.
That's the first thing. That's the first and only thing we do.
Right. And we've dealt with that in a number of cases. So If you found a use you've identified as being commercial, you should contact an attorney. I think you should contact Doniger Burroughs in Venice,
yes.
California.
Yes.
You know, we'll talk to you and see exactly what's going on, and we can guide you toward the next steps. But if we speak with you and we think that you have a case, the process starts with a cease and desist letter.
Okay.
You would draft a demand letter with the evidence regarding the artist's creation and the infringement, send it to the defendant with a demand for information, evidence, documents relating to the infringement at issue. At that point, we can try to work it out with the other side. Maybe we do, maybe we don't.
Yeah,
if
ideally.
We don't, then you go to court and you start litigating.
What's the initial, like, I want to call you guys and following your advice, it was a commercial, someone used my word commercially. What's the sort of like initial consultation or?
Well, at our firm, because we do artist representation, content creator representation, we don't charge a consultation fee.
Right.
So if you have a claim, you can email us and call us, and somebody, it may be Steven, it may be me, it may be somebody else at our office, but somebody will look at the submission and see whether there's something there.
How many people, I mean, from my perspective, like, I hear this at least twice a week on Facebook alone, like someone stole my work or my friend's work. How many people call you, like, over the course of a week with, you know, someone put this on my personal blog? I can only imagine that's the number one call you get.
Calls certainly come in every week.
Yeah. Right.
And it's a lot of calls. And it's also a lot of emails now as well. We do, in addition to our law firm blog, we run a blog called You Thought We Wouldn't Notice, which is an artist rights blog that we actually, notwithstanding my admonition earlier to not post on social media or post on the internet about your dispute, we actually post comparisons of original artwork and then knockoffs by.
Oh, wow. What's the name of that? So I should mention, I'm gonna follow up with some of these things on weshouldbeorganizing.com, so we're running out of time. But in case you, some of the things you mentioned, I'll post online as well. But what was the name of the?
You Thought We Wouldn't Notice.
Right.
As an indication of, you know, these people think they get away with this, they could take our artwork and use it, and we wouldn't either see that it happened or do anything about it. So it's a way for the artist to have a platform to push
back. To just
back.
Call people out.
Yeah, that's great. I wish we had another hour. That's the first thing I'm gonna do when I go home.
You'll see some phone ones.
Yeah.
Well, and just following up on what you were saying earlier, you were talking about personal use, how you do get calls. You're saying that it's not technically worth pursuing in terms of damages or the type of award that you could get from more protected production or creative outputs. But just for terms of principle, if someone does contact you for a personal use issue, what can you do for them in terms of maybe a cease and desist or a takedown notice?
Is that something that they're interested in? Yeah, you can always do that.
Yeah, and absolutely. If it's sometimes there's a personal posting that the people are upset about. Let's say you're an artist that is, you know, into animal rights, and some guy who has a steak blog all about delicious steaks, and you don't want your picture on his blog, absolutely, you can send him a cease and desist letter. You can do things with DMCA notices to at least have the material removed.
And how, so we're going to wrap this, but how do people contact you? What's your website address, and what's the best way to contact you?
Just DonegerLawFirm.com.
DonegerLawFirm.com.
And our number out in Venice is 310-590-1820.
And if you want to send us an email, it's info@DonegerLawFirm.com.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're gonna edit the first part when we go to archive. That's the kind of false start we had, but I hope you enjoyed the sort of live faux pas we had. But I really appreciate you guys being here. I really feel like we literally got through like four of the questions. So there's like, you know, there's like 14 other questions. But I think, you know, there's some really, I think there's even, you know, that there's some really good information that I didn't know, and you know, I know Alana and we've talked about these things, and I think a lot of this is going to translate to artists in a really practical way. And hopefully you guys can get some business out of this as well, and word gets out in this community.
No, our absolute pleasure. As I think we told you before the show, we've lectured for California Lawyers for the Arts, we've lectured for Fashion Business Incorporated, we've spoken for a number of different artist groups, and to do something like this where we can get the word out to a bigger audience is really great. We thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. And we'll catch you next time. Maybe we can have you guys back again in a couple months or something.
It'll be our pleasure.
Have you come back.
Yeah, I have them on the air, so like,
you've got more questions to answer.
Yeah.
So,
But I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, thank you.
All right, see you guys next time. We're out.